Exactly. Now.
It's like a whole multiplication.
Yeah. Okay, the recording.
It's like an influenza.
The recording is start, huh?
Okay.
Okay, no, okay. No,
everything that will be recorded will be used against you.
Okay, welcome to everybody. Okay. Hello, Michele? Roberti?
Please.
Roberti and the console.
Requested the desk.
Okay, thank you for coming. Okay, is the day of the resistance?
I'm coming.
Okay.
Are we going to talk like this?
Manifesto.
What's it?
It was very loud.
Well, you know, I was just trying to make sure you expect me here.
Okay, the idea was like, I started to think about this idea after this project at the first cover, the installation with the neon sign, Flu Power Flu. Okay, so we're talking about influence and power. We are in the capital of Europe also. Okay, so I think it was very important to thinking about this. But of course now after this world crisis, what's the point now for what the art can do something also, or I don't know, you can start after do like some things like Ambarabachi Chipoko.
You said the alphabetical order. You said it was an
alphabetical order.
Yeah, but you know, we are doing
so. So, thank you.
No, I'm not gonna start.
Okay,
I'll start.
Yeah, okay. Francesco, you are the device of the power. This is the device for the power.
I think we are okay with the music. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe. Hello.
Yes.
Something related to these modes, or let's say these means of transmission.
To me, this is something like a crucial question that we've seen developed in, let's say, at least in the latest 15 years and recent contemporary art practice, that has really also taken and brought art practice in a very specific scene of, let's say, context and domains. And starting really from Stefano's very, you know, now imply a positive meaning of the word, peculiar way of, you know, entering within specific fields of operation, of practice, I've been quite surprised, you know, at the sense that his own attitude, let's say what we could define as a modus operandi, a way of really working, it's somehow consisting of a kind of, I would define it, a viral methodology. I mean, by implying with viral, it's something which is quite close to virus. So in that sense, not only, you know, let's say the topics or, you know, the areas of reflection that are part of, you know, the big statement that, or that are so much part of Stefano's artworks and art practice, as that can be testified, you know, by the video works, sculpture installation, but also kind of really movable work, because all the recent work that he has developed over these recent years, you know, these kind of movable devices, like the cars and this kind of campaign that looks exactly like advertisement campaign or some kind of counter information, spreading of counter information. That's something that's very much, it's close with the idea of a viral spreading all over operating methodology. So in this sense, I'm interested in finding Stefano's approach like something that looks exactly like something which is somehow mimicking, so it's like somehow a way of having a mimetic approach. So in this sense, I'm speaking about, again, like borrowing a word which is, of course, mimetic has to do with, of course, mimicry is somehow also something that we know is very much related to biology. It's, of course, this kind of relation with, you know, an organism is evolving and adopting and kind of, you know, positive way specific features and so resembling to another species. In that sense, this kind of covering up and extension of specific features and, you know, in terms of, you know, spreading and moving, covering different areas, it's something that I found increasingly present in Stefano's work. And it's something really manifesting in recent works. So in that sense, the whole idea of mobility is something that we would easily find in his work with the cars, the vans, you know, circulating really in a physical way all over Europe, and, you know, touching a specific art center, art context, art situation. It's really something that is manifesting itself by adopting, in that sense, methodologies and approaches and way of working that are completely also part of, you know, different practices that are not necessarily usually defined as art. And in that sense, I like this kind of ambiguity that is very much part of this practice, that it's something that at first look cannot be immediately recognized from probably what is most of the kind of common public and recognized as a kind of art intervention. So in that sense, I think also it's interesting because the whole point of bringing you know, a reflection to a specific topic, a specific, you know, kind of provocation in Stefano's practice is not something that is immediately defined as, you know, a way already of trying to close down, defining, and let's say circumscribing the other reflection. On the contrary, it looks more like an opening up because it's really like a first kind of, it has this kind of immediacy, it's a kind of visual power that is, of course, it looks mostly like kind of, let's say, advertising campaign. It has, of course, this kind of immediate bright, don't know how exactly how to define the presence. And in that sense, the mimetic approach, as I would like to find the, and to describe here, is not just something that, in the sense, we would now define as something that has to take part
in, you know, what you usually define as the state of things, the state of, you know, reflection. But it's much more like becoming part. So in that sense, I'm interested that by adopting specific strategies, the work, the methodology, the approach, the attitude is exactly like providing you with exactly that level of, first sight, ambiguity, but it's much more like concrete, immediate practice that is already what is already the whole area of reflection about. And in that sense, of course, the whole tradition, you know, when speaking about mimetic approach, of course, it goes back with many areas of references that, of course, are so much related also to history. And of course, it has to go back to the idea of something which, you know, in the ancient times was definitely defined as mimeticos, so imitative, something that imitates. But the whole idea, you know, to of course goes closer to imitation, of course, has to do with, you know, so many, you know, in that sense, the whole range of meaning. It's something that has to do with representation, with imitation, similarities, resemblance, even a whole way of presenting. But presenting not in just, you know, something that, you know, it's easily recognizable already as a comment, but it's really at the whole, you know, intervention itself. So in that sense, I'm interested because how then is it possible then to attain, you know, to result, to come closer to a certain, you know, kind of communication, in that sense, kind of really touching, you know, like the heart of, you know, what is usually considered as this kind of transmission. By means, you know, of a certain kind of attitude. The whole level, in the sense, for me, again, is very interesting to be found here, is something that has to do not just, you know, usually there are different ways of defining something which is efficient, you know, something that, you know, works because it's immediate. And in that sense, of course, you know, light, communication device has this kind of immediacy that is like, okay, it's bright, it's clear, it's somehow communicative. But instead of, you know, just like in that sense, also to refer just very briefly to a couple of definitions that, of course, are not mine, but have been like studied and defined also by people much better into this whole reflection, this area of reflection. And in the sense, there is a specifically China philosophy and China thought specialist from France. His name is François Julien. And this professor has been really speaking about the different levels and layers of, you know, how, you know, a communicative system can be working at a level, and this is really an interesting comparison between what it defines as efficacité against efficiency, efficiency, which is the efficacy against the efficiency. And in that sense, you know, our models here, the usual European models, it's something that is very much, you know, working in a very somehow chain working kind of system, which is really usually adopted as a plan, model, and, you know, very kind of schematic, and in that sense very tightly constructed in a very mechanistic way. And this is really the efficacy kind of model. And of course, it's very much just based on action. And it's, of course, it obviously is very direct. The other model, which is somehow found in the Chinese mentality, the Chinese reference, set of references, is the efficiency kind of model. And this model, the result, of course, has to be there, but it's somehow different because it's not so much mechanistically, you know, conceived. It's much more based on a kind of potential, this inherent, already present in the way of working, in the way. And it's very much also based in the situation, which of course is brought up, which is developed. This transformative power, this communicative power, it has very much to do with a little more indirect form of transmission. So in that sense, of course, both the goals are directed in trying to transmitting, you know, in fostering this kind of exchange and this communication. But I mean, it's like efficiency has a different kind of communicative value, and I think that that's something that we could also try to find and, you know, find back and to try to connect in this kind of way, in this mimetic approach, and I think it's so very much part of Stefan's work. So just as the first round, to close it down, I just leave it, you know, open like possible, you know, areas of reflection, interaction, this idea of a mimetic approach, and it's so much based also in a kind of efficient approach instead just of a very efficient way. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Esther?
Yeah. I wasn't ready to kind of talk about or analyze your body of work, so. But for me, your question for this kind of gathering is more evokes for the question like what art or artists or works of art can be served or could be regarded as a political subject. Like, well, that's like how I try to approach this question of this gathering. And for me, like nowadays in the contemporary society or in the current operation of the cultural production system, for me it's like how artists are responding to the cultural production by itself, and how do you respond to the status quo and what you want to do with it, and or how you are manipulated by the system on the other way around. And yeah, but I don't want to kind of mislead this question to address to the functionality of arts in today's society, because that's not like that's not the issues that we're talking about or trying to look at this kind of art used for public service as what we were just talking like earlier, like how it was like it could be like seen like as a sort of public service, like in understanding of a democratic society. But I think it's a such a dilemma that like how you see your role as an artist and how you kind of interact with your profession, if you see it as a profession. I would like to speak about like a reflection that I had last year for the Biennial in New Orleans, Prospect 1. And it was a really interesting kind of occasion, because the only reason for the Biennial to exist was Dan Cameron trying to kind of propose it to the local government, and to use it really for cultural kind of tourism and economy like revival plan, and it's a kind of art used for survival plan kind of context. And artists who were invited there are like lots of like big name like international artists. But in that Biennial, it's also like very specifically like including local artists to participate. But when you really see the local artists, you will find like they are doing more like craft art, or it's really not a contemporary art, so to speak, that we are professional art audience would expect. In a Biennial occasion, but the mix of this is a political result, and the parallel kind of economic system that you have to deal with was also part of the reality, like how art could be like in a sort of public service, and I think it's a very interesting kind of occasion, because it touches several issues like what you asked. This global art and local art, and this border, this center, because in such a small city like New Orleans, and after such big trauma, and their local artists are trying to meet with the international celebrity kind of artists, and there is a crash, and the crash is very brutal. Like, if you are from the local, like, this is not the art that you know. And if you are from the international society, this is not the art that you want to see in a Biennial. And it's a hardcore crash. And also, it's a very sensitive issue for this Biennial to be organized, because they are trying to be part of the kind of a economical like revival plan, and the bio itself is spreading out through all this area that would kind of drown the water and suffer from the flood. And the artists will, well, some of the artists, I wouldn't give the name, build like a, well, like a big bowl structure kind of thing, or like a airplane, and it's like really almost kind of a ridiculous kind of inspiration from the trauma, and to kind of give a hope for the locals. And for me, it was like really ridiculous. Like, how do you see yourself as an artist in such, well, in this agenda? Like, how do you work with this context? But that was a very interesting kind of example. The works from Superflex, it's a really smart work. They did a kind of insightful research and figured out that actually the economic drop of Katrina actually influence the real estate price in Denmark. And because of Katrina, because the Americans' economic situation was going down, one family in Denmark were taking the advantage of this real estate drop and bought a house. So and so the difference of the house, of the price, the real estate price, were labeled for the photography that Superflex took for their house and sold in New Orleans, and for the price of the difference of the real estate, this photograph will be sold used to help the local economy in New Orleans. So it create a circulation of the economy system back again. And I think it's a very kind of neat approach of targeting this kind of economic issue for such local, instead of, you know, building a big bowl like a Ark of Noah or something. It's just kind of crazy idea. And yeah, so what I would like to open this question is like, to see like how artwork or a body of artwork and artists could serve as a political subject, like in a situation that you could, that probably certain power could be re-exercised to a different direction. And yeah.
I would have just, you know, just have a question.
The question is, don't you think that probably this kind of project, like in the context of New Orleans project, that where the result, let's say, is usually, you know, the big sculpture, the intervention, whatever, etc., etc., most of the time is also somehow based, related to a kind of collaborative effort that is then, you know, developed, you know, somehow, of course, by the artist in collaboration with blah, blah, whatever, you know, there are many modalities, of course, many options in that sense. So, because as far as we know, you know, mostly of this kind of event, they tend also to, I mean, there are also many other examples, Site Santa Fe, where usually again, the result is just, let's say, a small part of what has been, you know, usually the whole strategy of involving people, let's say, in the sense that what is usually conceived as the community. So in the sense, the whole project of the artist, of course, is not so much probably focused on what, of course, will be there at the end, the result of the show, as the, you know, finalized work destined, let's say, to the art community, but it also has all the pre-existing life, which is much more like a whole, and of course there are very different ways of developing it, but let's call it the collaborative effort, you know, to develop a kind of community, and in that sense the art, since we're speaking of, you know, usually this kind of democratic, or you said like public service, it could, in that sense, help, you know, in bringing or developing, I mean, something, again, that even Superflex have been also, in the past, somehow developing, I don't know what they were doing, you know, the beer, the ecological beer. That's my question.
Yeah, but for me, it's like how... Well, I'm not artist. I don't know how to speak for artists, actually.
No, no, no.
Yeah, but,
it's a possibility.
Yeah, it's a possibility. For For me, probably for an artist, it could be up to the level of kind of personal commitment, individual commitment to the issue that you are trying to address too. I think this sort of commitment is very important, and you can see the sincerity from the work of art. And for me, that's probably the most important thing, because nowadays when this, for the public service, like a public art or like a lot of organized, like a buying organization, they are inviting artists to do commission work. And those commission work are, you know, could be like, could be in such a kind of specific context that actually are very far away from the artist's personal condition. And when you just do like one research trip, like you spend 3 days there in such a that destination, like how much can you really like feel or understand the complexity of such context and the problematics? So
that's also the responsibility of the artist to be to engage himself in the project and to agree.
Yeah. So I think the autonomy of
the position that he gets to refuse as a person, as an artist.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. And also I think curator will also have share the same responsibility in this process, because you really don't invite artists, I mean, to, I don't know. I think the process is very delicate.
And you don't invite an artist just to have his name on the
On the show, and yeah.
Which is interesting, but I think a lot of people do, and then at the end it doesn't work out because actually it's completely not their domain, for example.
Well, totally.
Yeah, I'll step in. About a new lens, I have to say that all the artists I spoke to that have been there, when I was asking about how was the show, how was the city, they were all like, it was great fun, really had a great time, the French Quarter is just amazing, blah, 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 which I think says a lot about how they were involved, really, on the political implications of being in an exhibition like New Orleans. But I don't want to point the finger at Prospect, because I think it's the last ring of a long chain of very similar situations. We've seen it before in Johannesburg, I think, in 1997. We've seen it in Tirana, in Havana. I mean, there are so many big, possibly in Taipei too, I'm not sure. There are quite a lot of big shows and biennials that just like parachute themselves on a city or on a situation without being too much concerned about establishing a real dialogue with the local art scene. Number one. Number two, I'm always a bit skeptical about artists being able to really deal with this kind of political issues, like they're just these sort of semi-god creatures coming from everywhere and just saying, okay, I know how to deal with this, this is the answer, and just providing something that people that have been fighting or struggling all the time in that situation weren't kind of able to see, but the artist was. I think it's really, really dangerous. And again, this is something I've seen a lot happening, and I'm not quite sure if at the end of the day, although you get some a lot of interesting works, I'm not sure if they're really effective in terms of really providing a change or an answer to some of the issues. I have the example of Manifesto 6 in Cyprus, we were talking about it before. I think it was really arrogant of an institution like Manifesto to step into a delicate political situation like Cyprus and claiming to have the answer. Obviously, it turned out to be a lot more complicated than that. And the result eventually was that the show was cancelled. There you go. And nobody bothered to ask what the artists in Cyprus were thinking about that. I mean, it's a very interesting place, geographically. It's sort of in between Asia and Europe. And, I mean, there's still a lot of barbed wires around. It's still really complicated, and it would be really interesting to, you know, to listen to what they had to say, not to get there and speak and say, okay, this is what you have to do, which is basically what they did. That said, I think the team is getting very political now. Maybe it wasn't the
they're in the power.
Maybe it wasn't the original intention. I mean, the power of the artist can be a measure in a lot of different ways, not just about a politics.
But you know, finally, everything is politics.
Yeah.
Everything is politics. Excellent.
Finally.
Excellent. Okay. Okay. Well, you know, I was just thinking that there are also other ways in which an artist can really express his power or her power, depending. It's not just about. I mean, if you look at the past, you can see that it wasn't just about politics. There were also different routes, like fame, for example, like, you know, intrusions in other creative fields or whatever. We had a wonderful example in Andy Warhol when he opened the factory in the 60s in London. That was, you know, I think the core of the experiment was really to mingle with the music scene, the film scene, what was really happening in New York at the moment. You had a similar, very interesting experience in London in the 60s with the Indica Gallery, which is where Yoko Ono met John Lennon. Something like that happened again on a different note in the 80s, where contemporary art was suddenly something really cool and something really, you know, the East Village is more or less the center of the action. You will see people like Basquiat and Clemente hanging out with actors and whatever, and poets. But what's left? That's the big question. What's left? Part of a lot of daily popularity, but I'm not sure on the long run how these artists really have managed to affect, to actually leave an influence on the cultural life in general.
But it creates build itself.
Yes, I think it helped. Yes, of course it did. It created to help. Yeah, it helped creating a situation. Yes, definitely. But I'm not sure now, looking back.
In terms of awareness, changing all the.
Yeah. You need to use the microphone. You're not going on record.
No. The question was just if, I mean, the big change could be just on the level of awareness, or, you know, also trying to enter a bit more.
I think the mode of production in the opera is very peculiar situation, because it really is up to very individual situation. And yeah, I don't know how to summarize it before making like a polarization kind of understanding for artistic knowledge production.
Yeah, actually, I have a question for the panel, because I'm under the impression that the art world today seems a lot more open to these intrusions than in the past. I mentioned John Lennon and Yoko Ono before. She's normally seen as the cause of the breakup of the Beatles and How the Witch, but not many people know that the same kind of resentment that pop music fans had for her were also present in the Fluxus group towards John Lennon, because he was this pop star jumping in a very pure kind of, you know, very avant-garde situation where we don't want this kind of intrusion. It's just, you know, just spoiling, you're just taking it somewhere else. It's not good for us. 30 years or so later, we have Matthew Barney and Bjork, and it's all very welcome. So how come? I threw a bomb in the room. I know. I was just obviously you're invited to participate as well. It's not a rhetorical question, by the way. I'm genuinely asking. You know, if
I think that it is.
I think that kind of example works very much on the level of fame and the kind of celebrity and that kind of, let's say, an economy of. Depicting our desires and so on. It's not really, it's just something, you know, creating a kind of expectation that is working much more on a different level, which is not really a thing how much art practice is based upon, or it's much more on all these, I think it's really the marketing, you know, fame and
So in that sense, of course, it's like there is a whole reciprocal, let's say, benefit that of course comes backwards, both in the music field and both in the art field. But I don't think it's really working on the level, you know, an exchange of, you know, knowledge, practice, whatever. And even if Ben McMurray has been then, I don't know, or let's say New York has been collaborating and doing the soundtrack for the recent movie of Matthew Barney. And still I think that they're very much separate, independent kind of practice.
I don't know, I mean, have you seen the pictures, the series of pictures? That seems quite open to me.
Ah, it's, you mean the one with the yes. whale or with the Japanese?
Yeah.
I don't see really this major departure from, you know, Matthew Barney's previous, you know, kind of weird imagination. Of course, I mean, it's covering up like a whole new, let's say, sectors, but these kind of words of fantasy and so on, to me, it's not that much affected, you know, from any kind of improvement, that improvement, you know, really change, from inner change. I think it's, I don't know, it stays more in the same already predefined areas of work, of production, in a sense. The kind of exchange that probably was happening in between different fields of, if we want to speak and give examples, I don't know, in between music and art and things like this, like what was happening really back in the 60s, and since we were just now quoting, giving some examples like Fluxus generation, or I don't know, first minimalist generation of artists and musicians, I think that was really somehow having a different degree of exchange and reciprocal influence, in my view.
Because you think it was more more experimental?
Yeah, but in much more experimental, much more working on between the structures, how, you know, people were rethinking and influencing themselves, and really trying to challenge completely an economy of art production, art circulation, art communication, at the end, concept of art. Nowadays, the concept of art, you know, whatever they could be, you know, free, open, whatever, it just has this kind of golden domain of high fashion, advertisement, whatever. I mean, it's just, let's say, the wealthy level of collectorship, I mean, has nothing to do really with changing of mentalities and how really art is also a very basic parameter is changing your life and your vision of the world and your way of conceiving art as a part of your own life. Of course, maybe at that time it was still very much related to a very, I don't know if you call it idealistic, but, you know, vision of art that could really be part of life, and in that sense, I think when people like Fluxus, Jonas, whatever, they were not really, you know, having any distinction between what was, you know, cooking for some friends and then doing the opening and then doing, you know, special
yeah,
events.
I think the case of Ukono and the Spiro was totally different, and yeah, I think Bjork and the collaboration between Bjork and Martin Barney is totally not experimental. It's, for me, it's quite calculated, and it's a kind of a value kind of exchange. I mean, you know that, you know what happened. I mean, it is like a calculated from not from this from the side of visual art, but from the side of of pop culture, of fashion, of music industry, and they use the word
it's
industry.
Like Madonna,
I mean,
industry.
Yeah, I mean, it is a totally kind of different way of approach the audience and. And creating culture.
You still miss a Madonna exchange with some artists. That
yeah.
Be,
yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, no, but the question was more like, how come...
With Los Super Elegantes, something like this. That would be interesting.
Super Elegantes,
but
yeah.
But Madonna, I would like...
No, the questions were more like, how come this kind of intrusion is not causing a stir, like it used to do?
Yeah, because
where
I think
you
it's...
you see their social engagement? I mean, Matthew Barney in the book? Where in the combination in the couple? Because,
yes.
I mean, I don't see what you see, it seems. Because I don't see the combination.
No, no, I don't see. No, what I was saying.
They don't make the comparison to say of Ono and John Lennon because they did projects together which were like big.
No, what I was trying to say.
No,
what I was trying to say was something else. I was actually wondering why. this kind of association between a contemporary artist and a pop star.
Yeah.
It's not causing a big stir like he used to do in the 60s.
Yeah, but they're
you think because it's in novels?
It's because of their personality. It's not their first goal in the first place.
Because it's, sorry, it's not?
Yeah, it's their personality, it's not their goal.
To what? To do what?
To make a collaboration and to have this dream of changing the world.
So you think that the people are not making a big fuss about it because it's so it's
because it's not their goal at all. It's not because two minds come together that they work together and have a mutual goal to do this
private.
So what you're saying is that basically contemporary art people don't feel that Matthew Barney is getting corrupt by this because it's in office.
Totally. I mean, it's worth it already.
It's completely not socially engaged from the beginning.
I'm not so sure.
It's like saying,
if Matthew Barney is not socially relevant, I think it's very socially relevant. Well, it's not political, okay, but I'm not sure.
It can be political.
It can be political.
Everything could be political.
I personally don't. I personally think that Matthew Barney's book has been quite relevant socially.
I feel it as very aesthetical work, but I don't see the engagement to the public with having a big.
He's a mystical.
He's
a mystical artist,
like
building his own cathedral. I think it's quite something, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't see him as a straight communicator and trying to change the big mass.
No, he doesn't want to communicate like that.
Yeah,
but you can change a lot of things even by not being so open. I mean, Gerhard Richter is the proof.
Yeah,
he wasn't trying to change anything.
Of,
and then his paintings are quite strong in that sense.
Yeah, but I think we're mixing up like different styles of art or something.
No, but I mean, art is... I think that art...
Still, also, we don't have to be rigid in claiming, you know, a really specific distinction, like, okay, we have really the political artist, which is really the one interested in changing society, and so it's the only one that we can train as the one able to change your vision of the world. So, otherwise, I mean, we would only have, I don't know, Thomas Hirschfeld from one side.
We're only discussing and focusing on the words that are, like, very straight, going to a big
public. No, I think that there is this power of, you know, a kind of aesthetical involvement of the art project that still has a very, which is the most difficult things to figure out, imagine, predict, foresee, whatever, and still has this kind of political relevance. And exactly the example of, you know,
if it's in a silent way, and for example, like, driving around with a fan like this, that's really like very straightforward.
Because of course, I mean, already, you know, the comparison of a message with a symbol as powerful as that,
it will generate,
that's exactly how usually souls are generated and somehow spread all over. But of course we have some kind of history, some, you know, hook to reality, which of course is really the whole historical past here, which is not really like a neutral element. I mean, it's something that has, for instance, here a whole relation with the history of Germany, and of course Second World War and many things, and of course Berlin as a capital of a well-known kind of political regime only 8 years ago. and of course, a whole different layers, which of course is related now to biogenetics and so on, and medicine and the role of course of manipulations and so on, related to political history and, you know, to the past. So, of course, but I mean, even in, I think in hooking up with, in that sense, works that doesn't have, you know, this immediate, because again, the example of like Richter, or could be also, since we're in Belgium, Lucien Mans, and then it's a picture, so it's something bidimensional, and maybe it's not even so overt. But there are elements that connect very much, very specific, and it's still, you know, it's a work that immediately wouldn't define as immediately political, but the whole rework of the aesthetical level, it's brought up to a point that implicates and generates a kind of reflection that is much stronger what it first looked like. And in that sense, I think that it's good also still to maintain this kind of much
more flexible kind of relation with also different art practices. So we can find it in a sense interesting and powerful political implication, even in work that has this kind of very much defined, stable level, accomplished, whatever. And that it immediately doesn't look real, and they say, oh my god, it's really process-based, kind of working in the outskirts of a desperate town, in that sense. But still can have this kind of further and stronger kind of influence on many, many people's minds, and also on a longer, let's say, a longer time frame. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, again, the case of Richter is interesting and it's telling, because his work wasn't probably perceived as that much powerful when it was out, I think, still, you know, the early 70s and so on. But then, 30, 40 years later, it became really, in that sense, much more relevant.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I've been painting his uncle in a Nazi uniform in the 50s, so obviously. Painting his uncle. Uh-huh. In a Nazi uniform in the 50s was obviously a very strong statement. Even
it was just after the Civil War, so
it was intentional, probably, but yeah, that's the way it turned out. Like, I think you could say the same thing for Andy Warhol in a way. I mean, he always claimed not to be interested in his subjects, but I don't think someone who paints Jackie Kennedy 2 weeks after her husband died, or Marilyn Monroe 2 weeks after she died, can claim not to be interested in his subject. Obviously, I don't think he was an apolitical artist at all.
He's
totally
political.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I mean, it's like most political.
Well, I'm sure that it looks like the provocation worked.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you, if any of you have any questions, we will be carrying on.
Yeah, and actually I'm very curious about Stefano's reflection too.
Exactly.
This question, because when you try to ask this question to you know, three people who are not artists, I'm really curious.
We should ask maybe how much, I mean, intentional or not, has been, I don't know, maybe your shift really since your works. I mean, as far as I know, probably a few years ago it was dealing a bit more really with a mediated representation of reality, since it was so very much based really on media representation, since you're really working with video already, and in that sense it became increasingly involved and not only interested, also with the, you know, really dealing in a much more immediate way with this, you know, really dealing with the public, dealing with the real real context and the whole idea of mobility and dealing with, you know, specific situations, and of course, and just bringing also something which is just like a potential first element, and you just are like providing somehow the conditions to ignite, to start the reaction. Because of course you have just this kind of statement, you know, whatever simple as can be, but then you're bringing in really different kind of context. And by the kind of fiction that you want somehow to generate, you are expecting to have a different result from time to time. I can imagine that has been probably, I guess, in 10 years, the major shift in your own practice. I don't know how much
sometimes I think you need time for have this I think it's nice. It's not like, okay, like the idea of, you know, the young artists have like, he's a genius, like, you are 20, so you are a genius.
No, it's really a brand.
It's like something like a process. You're alive and step by step you. I'm very happy about this process.
And do you find it kind of re-engage you in the way you engage art?
Yeah.
It's a $1 million question.
Oh, it's another interview to me. And I was very interested because the tree aspect of the of your talk.
I have a question for you. I'm sorry.
No, okay, no, to everybody. Very specific.
Okay.
No, okay, yeah.
No, just because I...
We are here.
You know, I mean,
I know your work from quite a long time, and I remember when it was simply a big dimensional, and then eventually you switched to this new strategy. And I was wondering if you were... I mean, this way of cooperating obviously gives you a lot more visibility. Yeah. And I was wondering if you were consciously aware of that, if it was a deliberate, or if it was more like a consequence of what you were doing.
You just can't reply with your body language. You need to give me an answer. It's going to be like...
Yes,
a bit of both.
Yes.
Very clever.
Absolutely.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You were aware?
So you were a bit aware, a bit not?
No.
Always. You...
Yes.
Okay. You're lucky we're not in a court. You could never get away with it.
No.
No. I think we got it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. I met the girl in a party after the opening.
No, che documentazione.